the second podcast of The Secrets. This is a continuing series of podcasts about writing for writers. I'm Michael A. Stackpole. I'm a science fiction and fantasy writer, and I publish a bi-weekly newsletter called The Secrets, which is a serious tool for writers. If you're a beginning writer, it's the kind of thing that you would learn in your first 3 to 5 years of taking your craft very seriously. If you're a professional writer, a really cool thing about The Secrets is that we cover a lot of things that come out of the world of fiction, as well as a lot of things that are good diagnostics. If you want to look into The Secrets, you can go to www.stormwolf.com, and there's a page there that talks about The Secrets and how you can subscribe to the newsletter itself. One of the subjects that we cover early on in The Secrets, in the run of The Secrets, are things that I refer to as the rules of writing. And the second one that we'll go into today is a very, very important one. And pretty much only the best writers actually pay attention to this and find a way to utilize it. And it's what I refer to as double duty. The idea is this: every single scene in every story should do more than one thing. There are multiple reasons for this, and I'll get into them, but primarily you have to remember, when you're writing, every word is at a premium. Sometimes if you're writing a short story for an anthology and they say they want stories no longer than 6,000 words, you've got to make every single one of those words count. And some people will say, hey, in a novel you've got 100,000 words or 200,000 words, but you don't want to put in a spare word anywhere, because your editors will just ask you to take them back out. When I talk about a scene doing more than one thing, usually when we conceive of a scene, we have a primary purpose for it. Now, let's say that you want to describe the geographical area where your story is going to be unfolding. So we look out over this beautiful forested valley. There's a blue river running through it. There's a little road that twists through a meadow and goes to a ford in the river and goes back up the other side and disappears through the forest. And scattered throughout this meadow are lots of little flowers, but especially noticeable are the red poppies just scattered all over the place. There are plenty of writers who are very, very good, who can make an absolutely wonderful description out of all of that. But what else can we do there? See, if all you do is describe that, then you have exposition. And while it may be beautiful, it's not terribly satisfying, because readers tend to read for character. They want someone to live the story through, and these are going to be your characters. So how do we present this? Well, very simply, the second thing you can do in any scene is characterization. So instead of you, the author, describing this beautiful vista, you can do it through the eyes of a character. So you describe it, and you would describe it the way you might anyway, and then you talk about a character, we'll call him Daniel, sitting astride his horse thinking, this is so beautiful. I never thought I would be here. I left here 10 years ago to fight in the Holy Lands with the king, and I never thought I'd make it back. Well, all of a sudden, right there, not only have we described this thing, we've described his emotional connection to it, we've described the distance, so we know that there's going to be some change from things. We've begun to get a feeling of this character, that he sees this is so beautiful, and he wants to come home. Versus someone else, a different Daniel, sitting astride the horse, his hands in chains, looking at the vista, saying, this is 5 miles away from the town, and when they get me there, they're going to burn me at the stake. Damn them all, I will see them dead before I die. Again, we get an entirely different feel for a character there than we did in this very first scene. In addition, let's say we want to try and do three things, and it's very easy to do. We've described the vista with the river, with the roads, with the poppies, and that's absolutely beautiful. Yet a third Daniel, this one being a general, turns to his sergeant and says, this is where they attacked 500 years ago. All of those poppies, that's where every man in the king's guard fell. And when they came through later, the king and his retainers, they slaughtered 10 of the rebels for every one of those. And you know what they did with the rebel leaders, don't you? And the sergeant looks at him and says, you don't believe that legend, do you, sir? And he says, oh, I believe it. It's very, very real. He took the 100 leaders of that rebellion, beheaded all of them, and tossed their heads into the river, where they floated down and smashed through the rapids. And you know, they say that the families that still survive hunt the river for those skulls, and they have them in this gigantic cavern, and they've used foul magics to link the rebels together again, to think for them and provide them direction. Well, all of a sudden, we've done a lot of different things. We've got our descriptive vista. We've got a sergeant who clearly doesn't believe this sort of stuff. We've got a leader who does, and a leader who apparently believes a lot more foul things about the people in this particular section of the country. We're also left with the questions of why is he there, why is he bringing troops, if he is in fact bringing troops, or if he's going to negotiate. So we've already got his mindset being developed. We know how he thinks, we know how his sergeant thinks, and now we're going to be looking forward to seeing how the people that he is dealing with think. Another thing when you do more than one thing with the scene, when you do double duty or triple duty, is as you can see with that particular instance, this as you're trying to fit more things in, as you're trying to give some of the history, there are things that you'll just make up on the fly, as I did with the idea of the skulls being collected into a cavern and being linked magically. These are the sorts of things that you find yourself putting in which develop depth and complexity in the particular story. Now, if I were writing that story, it may in fact be that the skulls are not in a cavern, and that is just a rumor to the outside, but there may be some truth to it. It may be that each one of the rebel families did recover the skull of their loved one, and that skull is ensconced in a secret room in their castle, and that those skulls are linked so that the rebels can chat back and forth through those skulls. So when the general and his aide come to one particular castle, and they say that they're going to be going to the next one, an ambush is arranged when no one should have known he was there. So we can begin to play with this, and we can begin to see how that works, and then you deal with the implications of that sort of magic or those sorts of things throughout the rest of the world. It adds depth to the world. It really helps you build it out without having to use a lot of brain sweat up front. Brain sweat is a term that you will hear me use repeatedly through these podcasts, and part of the reason is this, is that when you as a writer do enough stuff that you get the reader thinking ahead, you get the reader projecting a future for your characters or a future of the story, when you've got them working with you, you fully engage them. And when you have them engaged like that, they'll stick with the story and they will come back for more and more and more. So that's the second rule of writing, double duty. Only the best writers do it. See how you can apply it. See how you can make it work for you. Welcome back to segment two of The Secrets. In this segment, what I'd love to be able to do in the future is to be able to answer emails from people to address problems that they have with particular writing or questions that they've got about the whole writing process. What I'd like to do right now, however, since I don't have any questions, and questions, of course, can be sent to thesecrets@stormwolf.com, what I would like to do, since I have no questions, is to address some of those things that I get asked fairly often, that other writers get asked fairly often. And one of the things sort of relates back to what teachers in grade school tend to tell their students, which is that you should write what you know. Well, if that was an absolute, of course, science fiction and fantasy wouldn't exist, since none of us know going into space, none of us know Darth Vader, none of us can cast spells. So what does this really mean? It means that when you are writing, the more comfortable you are with the subject, the more naturally you're going to approach it, the more easily you're going to write, and the more engagingly you're going to write about it. How do you figure out what you know enough about to be able to write about it? Well, everyone should just sit down and take a blank piece of paper, make up a list of the things that interest you, and the things that you know a lot about. There'll be things like school, subjects in school, books you've just read, things you know about, given your job. And these things you can probably rate. If you were to rate all of these things on a scale of 1 to 5, your job, you would probably be a 4 or a 5, you know, close to an expert. Rate yourself a 6 if you're an internationally known expert in a particular area. Any area that is a 3 or below is an area that you're going to want to do more research about. What do you do in terms of research? Well, first of all, you can read books about things and thereby get to know things. Second, you can interview folks. When I was working on the X-Wing stories, I would talk to guys who were fighter pilots and find out little things that they would tell me about. Other times, and this is just amazing, and thank God for cell phones, you can just sit down and listen. I recall one time being in the airport, and I was listening to a guy, he'd be sitting right behind me speaking loudly into his cell phone while I was trying to read, and he was talking to a woman, and he was using all those lovey-dovey little terms, you know, girlfriend-type terms, that you expect to hear between two people in love. And that was great. You know, you learn how people speak. You learn how to imitate that sort of stuff. What was very funny is I actually ended up sitting next to him on the plane. And as we ended up chatting back and forth, it became apparent that he had a wife and he had children. And that the person he was speaking to on the phone was not his wife, was a coworker. And he explained rather defensively that she was just a coworker and just a friend. And I found it kind of amusing. I didn't tell him I'd overheard the phone conversation. But just by listening nowadays, you can pick up a lot of things. You can learn of a lot of experiences. And the important thing, especially in talking about writing what you know and listening and picking up experiences, is that I may never actually use what I heard from that phone conversation from that guy. Frankly, I don't remember that phone conversation and won't remember it. However, I might write a story sometime about someone who learns that someone else is philandering through exactly that sort of artifice, exactly through that sort of dodge, and put that guy in problems with being blackmailed. So you can come up with story ideas, you can come up with great facts that you weave into stories, and it's all a question of making sure you know something before you go ahead and write it. Another question, or an ancillary question to this, is always, how much is too much? Look, too much research comes in when you find doing research is an excuse not to write. So go. Learn enough. Explain it as best you can. If you don't think you know it well enough, and then do a little bit more research. It ends up being a very, very simple thing. A third area where this is the write what you know is, should you put family and friends into stories? Sure, why not? You can do it. I tend not to, and the reason I tend not to is because if I decide that a story needs a character to die, or a story needs a character to change in ways that the person you've modeled it on wouldn't, you can run into problems with those people that you model things on. But when you're just starting out, that's okay. These people are people that you know how they react, and if you're lucky enough and they're cooperative, you might even say, hey, you're in this situation, you're tied, you've been thrown in the arena, and lions are approaching you, what do you do? And if they're honest, they'll say they die. And if not, you know, you'll have an interesting story. So that's that's really how you get started. Write what you know, write what you're comfortable with, and you'll be turning out some really cool stories. Welcome back to the third segment of The Secrets. Once again, we have a word from The Word Museum by Jeffrey K. Kirk, and this word is thieves' vinegar. And the reason I like this little phrase is because thieves' vinegar used to refer to a noxious concoction made of herbs and vinegar that thieves, that people said would be proof against the plague. And the name of it rose out of the fact that supposedly four thieves who used to plunder the dead bodies of people who had died by the plague seemed to be immune to the plague, and this was attributed to the fact that they took this concoction. And the reason I like this is that throughout stories, you can find this sort of thing being very interesting. It's the kind of stuff you can inject into your stories of having these things present in your worlds. It's a nice idea to play with, and it's a good way to drum up some slang and do some cool stuff. It also adds a considerable amount of depth to your story and really makes the reader think that you're exploring brand new stuff. And you can get all of this by finding dictionaries of ancient slang and mining them and learning how people thought in those days, how people spoke in those days, and that will make your world that much more complete. So look into this sort of stuff and use those archaic words that really ought to be saved. This podcast of The Secrets is copyright 2005 by Michael A. Stackpole. For more information about The Secrets, please visit www.stormwolf.com. Letters, comments, feedback, and questions can be sent to thesecrets@stormwolf.com. And there's information about getting subscriptions to the newsletter, and free copies are available of the newsletter at that website. I have two books for you to look for. One is The Secret Atlas, my latest novel from Bantam Books. The other is Perchance to Dream, which is a collection of short stories from Five Star and includes a brand new story set in the Dragon Crown War series. So I hope you'll take a look at those, or you can order them online. Good luck with your writing, and I will see you here in another week.